Well, Godard is highly aware that a cinematic audience almost instinctively immediately places a metaphorical value on every object that we see on screen. So it can be the most banal domestic object, but if you have a close-up and you put a piece of stirring music behind it, the audience knows that this will be important or that it's slightly sinister. And then we start attaching that to elements of the plot and we start thinking how this is going to be important through the rest of the film. And in fact, in Histoire du Cinéma, which is Godard's epic essay on the history of cinema, he says that what we remember about Hitchcock is things like a bunch of keys or a row of milk bottles. So we forget about the kind of intricacies of the plot and why it is that Cary Grant's actually running away from a crop duster. We remember these particular objects and the metaphorical value that they seem to hold for us.
Richard Martin is the author of The Architecture of David Lynch, a book that encourages us to peek beyond the twists and turns of a film's plot and consider what the scenery might be trying to tell us. That's ahead today on The Cinema Show, also coming up.
The way he expressed with his gesture, his silence, his faith and his values, he's a man of a strong ethics, and the way he sits, the way he smokes, it's very cinematographic.
We'll discover how the director of the stunning new film Mimosas used the most extraordinary cinematography to transport audiences to the peaks of Morocco's Atlas Mountains. And
I think that usually if somebody sets out to make a film about journalism, unless it's a scathing film like Nightcrawler, which is also in the season, it generally tends to be about the importance of integrity.
We'll find out why one discerning cinema in Dublin decided now was the time for a season of films that remind us of the power and responsibility of journalism. That's all to come on The Cinema Show on Monocle 24. A film's backdrop might not immediately come to mind as one of the more important aspects of the filmmaking process. But have you ever really thought about what the look and feel of a film's environment might tell us about its true intentions? Hello and welcome to The Cinema Show. I'm Ben Rylan. We'll look at what makes a film's scenery pop a little later. But first, a small cinema in Dublin is putting on a series of films focused on journalism. Why now? Well, of course, the work of journalists helps colour how we perceive the world around us, and the high responsibility of a professional journalist can't be understated. And yet it remains one of the least trusted professions, often blamed for everything from climate change being a hoax to the 2016 US election. The very swish cinema The Lighthouse in Smithfield, Dublin, is screening a season of films called Hacks, with titles such as All the President's Men, Network, The Devil Wears Prada, Nightcrawler, Zodiac, and even The Social Network, showing alongside an almost famous-themed karaoke party and an Anchorman-themed Sex Panther moustache party. I'll leave your imagination up to that one. The hope is to give audiences pause for thought about how we come to understand our world. Sebastian Stevenson takes us inside the handsomely designed lighthouse.
When you imagine the front of a cinema house, you usually picture a vast and showboating front, possibly Art Deco decorated if you are lucky. In the city centre of Dublin, the independent art house cinema called The Lighthouse is located in Smithfield. It actually shares a square with a few restaurants and apartments. In fact, the only sign there is a cinema here is a rectangular mirror that juts out into the square so you know that it's underground. Yet somehow this mirror doesn't intrude into the square at all. You'll just have to trust me on this. In fact, you follow that mirror into the cinema's entrance. You then are in a straight hallway with white walls and exposed wooden floors. It is a spare but not empty cinema. If you walk ahead to the end, you will see a cafe on your right to buy your ticket. to go down to your screening, take the other side of the hallway to a wide staircase, and you go down and down again. The cinema widens as you go down. At the end of the stairs is screening room 1 and 2. There are a total of 4. There is a bar with local brews from around Ireland. Go right and you find the 2 screening rooms with a fantastic architectural feature. As you walk towards room 1 and 2, the white walls are replaced with black walls. As you move closer to the door, beside you is a kind of upside-down triangle, which is where the seating in the screening rooms are, and below them, outside, is seating. This gives you a kind of low-ceiling comfort in a spacious hall to anticipate or reflect on your chosen film. That chosen film may be from a season of films that are showing in the Lighthouse at the moment called Hacks. The season looks at how the profession of journalism and its journalists have been portrayed, but why should we examine the examiners? Charlene Lydon, the programmer of the Lighthouse, tells me why they have created this season.
Maybe it's just me and the people in my office, but there is a sense that journalism is kind of falling apart and that people don't really know how to engage with people anymore. So I guess maybe pre-Sky News, so 30, 40 years ago, we didn't have news 24/7. And in a lot of ways, the internet has opened up this world where we can engage with news all the time and from all kinds of different people, and from just the regular Joe on the street, but also from huge big news agencies, some of which are good, some of which are terrible, some of which are like absolute nonsense fake websites that you just see stupid headlines on and you might not even bother to click and read it. So the way we engage has changed so much. And news used to be you pick up the Irish Times, and now it's like you have the Irish Times and a billion other things that you could be reading today. And that is crazy for people. Like, I don't know what to believe half the time when I read it. And, you know, there's so much in the media about fake news and Donald Trump and all of this stuff that it just seemed like a really timely time to get people thinking about it. And if you watch a film, whether it's depicting journalism in a positive or a negative light, I think us thinking about it and chatting with your friends, presuming you're going to bring all your friends to see these movies on a Friday night, I think that now is a really good time to discuss that, because how we engage with the media and with news is changing so much. And I think nobody knows how to deal with it. And we need to start that discussion.
And why do you feel that looking at fictional films of a very fact-based medium, what can that do to ignite discussion?
Well, exactly that. So you go in and you watch Nightcrawler and you come out and you're instantly talking about journalism and what you agree with and what you don't agree with. And the Lighthouse is a space where, like, the idea is that you do come with your friends and you do sit with it afterwards and you do have that chat. And this is curated in such a way that we want to promote discussion about all kinds of journalism, like even Anchorman, which has a lot of interesting things to say about 70s journalism. But this is how people engage with film. They come here to watch a film. It hopefully will enrich their own thought process about it. You're sitting with something and thinking about it, which if we didn't have this season of films, you might not have done. That's kind of the idea, is to promote people having chats about it, focusing their thoughts on how they feel about the media and the choices that you make every day.
Well, let's, I suppose, look at sort of the other ones that obviously star journalists or are about the kind of news media cycle over the various ages. Have you found that there is a portrayal that's kind of different, or is it actually quite similar when there's a film about journalism?
I think that usually if somebody sets out to make a film about journalism, unless it's a scathing film like Nightcrawler, which is also in the season, it generally tends to be about the importance of integrity. A film that we don't have in the season, but I just kind of felt was maybe too recent, was Spotlight. But I think there is this kind of emphasis on how people do their job. And it's a really, really difficult job sometimes, trying to find the truth. You know, it's like detectives, but also there's a lot of moral issues at play. So I do tend to think, like, All the President's Men, obviously, is just like A to B to C of how these people cracked this case. And then Network is something that is about, it's about integrity as well, but it's about, like, not allowing things to disrupt your integrity. You know, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. So I do think that that is kind of a common thread. The Killing Fields as well is just like how you keep your integrity when you're watching awful things happen all around you all the time.
So is there an element of cinema education as well with this kind of season?
I guess it's more about bringing great films to the attention of people. So a lot of people have seen All the President's Men. Less people have seen the adaptation of In Cold Blood, which is an amazing film, amazing book. So part of it is, of course, giving people the opportunity to see these films on the big screen. And also, I would say this, of course, but seeing a film that you've seen a million times on TV on a big screen is a completely different experience. And interestingly, I wasn't sure how this would work, but Zodiac is by far our biggest seller of the season so far, and it's the one that people have been really, really pleased to see come back, because whether it's that people caught it on DVD at home or whatever, but there is a real thirst to see that film on the big screen, and it's quite potent. Like, people are literally tweeting us going like, wow, finally back on the big screen. And you know, sometimes things just surprise you, and I'm a huge fan of the film. We have a beautiful 35mm print, so I just think it's a really interesting thing when you get that feedback from people that they're really appreciative of seeing something like that on the big screen.
This isn't the first time The Lighthouse has done a cultural event. In fact, The Lighthouse has a few industry neighbours. Right beside them is an award-winning animation studio called Brown Bag Films that has produced animation for Amazon Studios, the BBC, Nickelodeon, and the state broadcaster RTE. There is a screen acting academy that is parallel to the cinema called Bow Street. So are they around much?
They're in quite a bit. So it's an amazing thing. Brown Bag have like hundreds of employees, and they tend to hold their staff meetings and stuff in the Lighthouse, so I'd imagine it's a good resource for them. And obviously for Bow Street, it's really nice to have a cinema that shows a lot of Irish content as well, just on the doorstep. We run a, used to be monthly, but it's quarterly now, a shorts night, so anybody can submit their film, and it's a really cool thing. And we do get a lot of submissions for that, and then on the night it's just all the filmmakers come with their family, friends and actors, and so that's always a really nice community kind of a night. And all the proceeds from those short nights goes to charity as well, so it goes to a local charity as well. So small things like that, that really, I think they really help to make the community feel like they're part of it. And when you're a cultural space, sometimes I feel like there's a danger of being intimidating to people. You know, it's a big white space. It shows weird films. You know, we wanted to feel like it belongs to the community. So we do make the effort to make sure that there's a nice, cozy, comfortable vibe here, and that people kind of have some sort of ownership over it. So things like that, I think, help.
Hack season ends on the 9th of October, and check the full listings on the website, lighthousecinema.ie. For Monocle in Dublin, I'm Sebastian Stevenson.
Thank you, Sebastian. Still to come, we'll take off to Morocco's stunning High Atlas Mountains with filmmaker Oliver Lachey. But first, a look at some of the other stories in this week's press. The two-time Academy Award-nominated director Amer Salama has announced that he's working on a cinematic response to Clint Eastwood's successful 2014 war movie, American Sniper. That film starred Bradley Cooper as the US marksman Chris Kyle during his struggle against a sniper fighting for Iraqi insurgents. Salama told The Hollywood Reporter that he was so incensed by Eastwood's treatment of the material that it inspired him to tell the story from a different perspective. He also called American Sniper a pro-war film and said that his story will focus on the antagonist of Eastwood's film and will be distinctly anti-war. Eastwood describes himself as a libertarian and said shortly before last year's US election that he'd probably vote for Donald Trump. And YouTube is giving traditional broadcasters another reason to be afraid. Despite being just over 4 months old, YouTube's TV subscription service is now available to more than half of American households. A new report here in the United Kingdom suggests that traditional broadcasters could lose up to £1 billion every year if platforms like Netflix, Amazon, and now YouTube continue to tempt audiences into cutting the traditional TV cord. Now, while a lot of today's streaming platforms seem to be aimed at viewing on a small screen, sometimes no bigger than a phone, there's one that looks truly magnificent no matter what screen you happen to be watching. Mubi is the curated site of cult, classic, and award-winning cinema. If, like me, you prefer watching films on a large television screen at home, then Mubi has you covered. All their films stream in crystal clear quality on your phone, tablet, giant TV, or even home cinema. Among the titles playing right now is Moana with Sound. Remember that Disney movie, Moana? Well, this is the real story as told by documentary maker Robert Flaherty, with a beautiful soundtrack by his daughter. There's also still time to catch the Brigitte Bardot classic The Truth and the Argentinian dance film The Parrot and the Swan. Sample a month of movies for free by heading to mubi.com/monocle. That's MUBI/monocle. This is The Cinema Show. Stay tuned. Mimosas is the visually epic new film from the Morocco-based director Oliver Lachey. Shot on location in the stunning High Atlas Mountains, it's the story of a dying sheikh travelling across an extraordinary landscape. The film took the Grand Prix prize at this year's Cannes Critics Week, and it arrives in cinemas this week. Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco sat down with the director, Oliver Lachey.
It's curious because I moved to Morocco. Being here, living here in UK, I was with a scholarship for some month, and I don't know. Since the first day, I felt at home. No, I went to the countryside to live. Some of my family are from the countryside too, so I don't know. I connect from the beginning, and the country was a mirror for me. It was a place to travel, beautiful places, but also inside. No, was a very good trip of myself.
One of the stunning things about the film, it is the scenery. You know, it can be quite breathtaking. Where exactly was it set?
Set in the High Atlas, also in the Anti-Atlas. I was living in the middle in Ouarzazate for 4 years, and I was a good excuse to explore the places. My producers proposed me to shoot near Ouarzazate, that is a city with a lot of hotels and beautiful sets. I insist to shoot in these isolated places in the mountains because, I don't know, I think that it's important to deserve things. It was important to pelerinate behind the camera, to be in the limits of ourselves, to be a caravan too. We were shooting a caravan, but the queue was important to be also a caravan. And I always put the same example with a tree. The fruits, the good fruits, are never in the hands size, you know. I mean, you have to climb the tree to have the best fruits that are on the top. And, of course, obviously it's risky, but it's, I think, a rule of the universe that you have to deserve things.
Some people have been describing, I don't know what you think about it, because it can be a bit difficult explaining exactly the plot, but would you say, some people are saying, a Muslim Western? It might be a bit simplistic because the film touches about religion, spirituality. If you could tell us a bit more.
People,
you know, say
it's religious Western or metaphysical Western or psychedelic Western, I hear too. I don't know. I think I'm going to the exploring the essence of tradition, in that case is the Islam, but after traveling with the film this year, I noticed that when you go to the essence of a tradition, you are talking to other traditions. If you understand the meaning, etymological meaning of religion, that comes from Latin religare, that means to link, not to divide. So an artist also, I try to explore these similarities, you know. Mimosas is very influenced, for example, we are in UK, so I have to talk about that. It's very influenced by the Arthuric tradition too, the Holy Grail quest, yeah. And like all these medieval text is literature is an epic tale that is at the same time a mystic tale, like all the chivalry.
And I want to know about, more about the casting. I read one of your interviews that, you know, some of the cast were actually your friends. I mean, in some ways, tell us a bit how did you choose the cast? So for someone, for example, Said Agli as well.
Said Agli, I met him in the desert. He is living
in the desert.
Yeah, he is living in Agdez, that is an amazing place, and is the door of the desert and on a palm grove. And you know, it's like, I mean, I shoot my friends, so it's like you. I mean, you are touched by something, and like you are a filmmaker, you try to traduce that in images. In the case of Said, was the way he expressed with his gesture, his silence, his faith and his values. He's a man of a strong ethics, and the way he sits, the way he smokes, it's very cinematographical. No, he's a knight, a light knight. And Shakib is the same. You are sitting on a coffee and you see him and his innocence, the way he expresses himself, this kind of wise fool, so expressive, so, and you are astonished and you want to... I mean, it's the third film I do with him. I start to work with him 10 years ago. I learned to directing him. He's someone who doesn't know to read, he doesn't know to write. I mean, it's very difficult to work on a regular way like if he was an actor.
The cinematography, I mean, it's wonderful. What's the technique used at Mimosas to give this beautiful effect?
You know, we are talking about the relation between cinema and spirituality, but more than in the thematics or the script or the ideas of the film is on the image where you can express an idea of transcendence. Or for me, it was very important to shoot in 60 millimeters in film. It is noble material, and the work was to try to build a kind of spiritual geometry with the image. I think there is a tempo, there is a rhythm that can penetrate the spectator. No, I really believe on this mysterious relation between image and human metabolism. I think something strange happens in theater, and like a filmmaker, I like to explore that.
I mean, what's the role? I mean, if you can tell our listeners the role of religion and spirituality in this film in particular, because it does play a big role.
You can express religion or spirituality with the theme. You know, they are talking about faith all the time. It's curious because when Shakib says to Ahmed, have faith, keep on the faith in God, always someone is dying just after.
Yeah.
Of course, they talk about that and about to trust in what they are doing. Also, I wanted to make a film about someone who gives himself to his intuition. Intuition that is a way to interpret that world, that is a level of perception that is not very, that was very spiritual or part of a spiritual development that is not more used today, you know. Ahmed says that knows the path to go to Sijil Masa, the film, they have to carry the body of his master,
yeah,
to bury him in his village. And he says he knows the path, but he doesn't know him. But then he knows, you know. I think it's like you, like journalist or a scientist or a teacher, that it's part of the human nature that always we do things that we don't know to do them, you know. When we give us to our intuition, we can transcend ourselves. I think this is very beautiful.
I believe your first feature film came out 6-7 years ago. Mm-hmm. And this one, are you already thinking about upcoming projects?
Yeah.
Or you're just focusing on promoting Mimosas?
No, I'm working. I just arrived from a shooting of my third feature. That is a film about an arson, a pyroman. It's a film about fire. Just get the first images coming from the laboratory. It's amazing, the fires, big fires, 20 meters of flames in the night, firefighters, countryside. I'm very optimistic with this project. And also I'm working on a psychedelic road movie. It's a bunch of ravers, punks, ravers with their big trucks who are looking for a party, looking for an after party in Morocco. Is a kind of Mad Max Zero, I like to say, you know, a pre-Mad Max, pre-apocalyptic, and with trucks racing, and a very, very crazy project. Also with the same idea of Mimosas, an epic tale, an adventure tale, but also an initiatic, metaphysic tale.
Oliver Lachey speaking to Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Mimosas is out now in cinemas. Oliver Lachey's film has been praised for its stunning imagery, and while it's certainly a delight to behold, the role of extreme beauty on the screen is rarely skin deep. During the early days of cinema, as films began to gain recognition as true art, filmmakers found new ways of using scenes, settings, and landscapes to set a mood and help tell the story. Richard Martin is the author of The Architecture of David Lynch. He explains now how a film's scenery can run much deeper than we might think.
I am big. It's the pictures that got small.
I knew there was something.
Well, I think the sheer visual pleasure of cinema, the kind of shimmer of the screen and the glitzy Hollywood culture that surrounds it, I think this is something that has appealed and almost seduced audiences right since the birth of the medium. But it's something also that has its problematic side as well. I think we can feel that we're being seduced by a film into having certain emotions or experiences that we both like, but also might take us into dangerous territory as well. As Norma Desmond says in Sunset Boulevard, we had faces then. And so the close-up in silent cinema is a particular way of showing the beauty of the actor and seducing the audience, I think, at the same time.
I just wanted to come here.
To Winkies?
This Winkies.
Okay. Why this Winkies?
It's kind of embarrassing.
Go ahead.
I had a dream about this place.
Oh, boy.
You see what I mean?
I think the first film where I was immediately captivated by its visual beauty was David Lynch's Mulholland Drive, which is a film that both seduces you but also makes you aware of how it's manipulating you as well. So the first two-thirds or three-quarters of that film are showing you an image of Los Angeles and Hollywood that's extremely attractive, and it's full of, in a sense, clichés. So we have palm trees and Hollywood sign, and we have wonderful Art Deco apartments, and we also have modernist houses on the side of the Hollywood Hills. And there's a sense in which this all adds up to an extremely attractive, beautiful image of Los Angeles. And then there's, in the latter stages of the film, Lynch undercuts that and plays with your attachment to those particular beautiful images. And I think that was a film that was extremely important for me in showing how the visual beauty of cinema can also be a dangerous attraction as well. It's strange, I was thinking about this at the weekend. I saw Dr. Zhivago, David Lean's film, and I was thinking about how incredibly beautiful bleak Russian landscapes looked. And in that film, you're seeing these awful Russian winters and this incredible long train journey through this landscape. On the big screen and in a wonderful auditorium, it looks visually stunning. And I was thinking, this is a bit of a problem. I'm kind of enjoying the desperation of the characters in some respects, that they're in a landscape which is deprived in lots of ways, which is war-torn, in which they're struggling with circumstances, but Lean shoots it in such an incredibly attractive way that you're seduced by it as well.
Didn't you ever hear of women's lib?
What do you mean, women's lib? You're a young girl. You should be at home now. You should be dressed up. You should be going out with boys. You should be going to school. You know, that kind of stuff.
God, are you square?
If I'm thinking about films set in New York in the 1970s, so Taxi Driver or The French Connection or Dog Day Afternoon, often they show this image of Manhattan in particular that looks like it's full of crime and it's depressed economically and there's graffiti everywhere and the metro looks terrifying. But there's a strange way in which it looks extremely thrilling as well. And when you compare how Manhattan looks in those films with how Manhattan can often feel these days and can feel much more homogenous or corporate, then suddenly films like Taxi Driver look like a much more thrilling or attractive vision of urban life. So I think these very images, they can act as a historical record of a place. They capture a place at a certain moment in time. And then how we relate to that can change as the decades go past. For me, it's always important to stress that cinema is a spatial art, that what a director does is architectural, that an architect and a filmmaker, they're both involved in framing and sequencing space. And producing a beauty out of that is something that both architects and filmmakers are interested in. I never think of architecture or cities or landscapes in cinema as merely being a kind of neutral backdrop to the action. They are the action themselves. And I think when we really love a film, we tend to fall in love with the entire space that we're immersed in when we're watching it.
Richard Martin, the author of The Architecture of David Lynch. And that's all for this week's show. Next week, we're on location at the Venice Film Festival. It's bound to be a lot of fun. You don't want to miss it. Today's program was edited and mixed by Kieran Matthew Banerjee and researched by Yolene Goffin. I'm Ben Rylan. Thank you for listening.